I'm Andrew Coates, and I am the host of the Live Free and Die Hard podcast. This is episode 309, and I have an exciting guest here. I have been seeing Vince Del Monte, his media, his presence in the industry. He's a fairly iconic business leader and mentor. And but this is actually the first time we've been face-to-face. We've been chatting a little bit over social media. And Vince is one of those people that, I'll say it, I never felt entitled to his time to reach out and ask to have him on the podcast. But through a discussion, he's been gracious to take some of his time and to come on and chat with us. So, Vince, welcome.
Thanks, brother. It's crazy. I just noticed the date, May 8th. I've been online for 18 years now, since May 4th. It's crazy where time goes. And I've been hearing your name a lot as well, man. So it's an honor to be here.
We've got a lot of mutual friends, as we were talking about off air, like Natalia Mello, who's been incredible. Yeah. And she's one of my speakers at my event coming up here in September in Edmonton. So, and very deserving of it.
But yes, absolutely.
We had some stuff that you primed me with. And I think these are important topics right now, because I feel like the buzzword of the business side of the industry is scaling. Last few years, all we hear is talk about scaling, scaling, scaling. And I think there's a lot of pressure on coaches to scale. I think a lot of people are being sold on this idea. And I like to joke that, I consider myself a six-figure coach. Now, when someone tells you they're six-figure, usually they're closer to 100,000 than 900,000. That's usually the truth. You hear a lot of people talk about seven-figure businesses. And what I like to point out to coaches who are hearing this, it's like they usually come with seven-figure overhead and seven-figure headaches. So where does this approach to scaling go wrong? The mistakes, and how do you approach teaching scale in a safe way that is sustainable?
Oh, dude, I love this conversation. So I've nicknamed it the satanic cult of scaling. It almost is a cult, and it is. I think a lot of childhood traumas and insecurities just being, played out on the entrepreneurial, field, if you will, and. I think a lot of survival strategies that we develop, whether it's in our teens or from some sort of childhood wound, that get brought into this arena of trying to figure out. I think the big question every, guy and gal is trying to figure out is, who am I? And, what is my worth? Where do I get my importance? For me, I found it in running back in the day as a good runner. And then my running career was over. And then I got in the world of personal training. I became really good on more so selling personal training and marketing the personal training at gyms and building a name and growing gyms. And then I discovered the internet and same story. I wanted to make a name for myself. And I developed this brand of being an online fitness coach for skinny guys who want to build muscle. And I was one of the, I guess, what you would call the OG. So I got exposed to a lot of dudes that we're all just getting started in those like early days, 2006 to 2010. And we were all just trying to figure this thing out. Like I wasn't raised, like I never heard my mom or dad ever use the term six figure or millionaire or seven figure. Those are foreign concepts. I wasn't raised with this language. And it's crazy how like common it is today, six figure, seven figure, everything. But it generally started off as more a curiosity of like what's possible. Like I remember when I got into my online business, the whole intention was to make an extra $2,000 to $3,000 a month. And I didn't even know what the word scale meant. It was literally to cover my bills and to not have to work for my boss eventually. That was it. Like there was no ambitions beyond that. I thought that was a grand enough ambition. But once you started mingling with certain guys, like John Benson and Ryan Lee and some of the early dudes, who started the online fitness marketing, like with eBooks, they start reporting numbers at these mastermind events. And they did 30K launch, a 40K launch. One guy does 100K. Another guy does a 400K. So next thing you know, like, holy crap. None of us knew this world even existed. None of us knew this was possible. Where I think there was actually a lot of like purity in the whole thing was like, we were all just learning and just taking massive action. Like I can genuinely say none of these guys were money hungry because I spent a lot of time with them on trips and you get to know like who they really are. So it all felt just kind of, cool. It was like, hey, we're making money, but we enjoyed the trips and eating out for dinners. But as things went on now, like 2012 into like 2015, started to become a lot more competitive. And you could start to tell, like, guys' businesses were getting a lot bigger, a lot more complicated, and there was more at stake. You know, it used to be 50% affiliate commission, then it went up to 75% affiliate commission, then it went up to 100%. And then some guys started offering 110% commission just to acquire a customer. So now there's guys who are like learning the business side of this. It was no longer just like, hey, look, we're all making money. This is cool. Let's share our list. It became actually competitive. I started noticing even like, you know, you go to a mastermind party and like, hey, so and so just swiped all my stuff. And, you know, hey, so and so is like using all my ads. Hey, so and so swiping all my, and then all of a sudden it's like, we don't talk to him anymore. Or, I'm not promoting that guy anymore. And all of a sudden, I started noticing friendships were falling off. Guys' businesses were getting into like multi seven figures and eight figures. And it just became different. And because these were the guys you're running with, you want to keep up. You want to keep up. And your identity became not so much how much impact you're having. I think we all got carried away. We all kind of just got caught up in having bigger launches. And I think a lot of guys lost themselves and started getting into, I remember when affiliate marketing started to become harder and harder, because there was so much competition, like people started, like friends of mine were making bigger and bigger claims. And I'm like, guys, you're selling, you know, fat-free coconut oil. Like, guys, what's going on here? You know, the claims got bigger and bigger. And there was this whole phase where you could tell there was a certain group of guys that were chasing the money and they knew what offers to put out there. They started launching supplements. They started, you know, making bigger and bigger claims. And then that's kind of when I drifted out. I'm like, this isn't this game I want to play anymore. And I just went right back to my roots of just helping skinny guys build muscle. I got out of the affiliate marketing, but there was a long period of time where there was a pressure to do a bigger launch, to do bigger prize money, you know, hire more people, and it became complicated. It was no longer kind of simple.
I had Mark Young recently on the podcast, and Mark was, we talked about the old affiliate networks and how it's very, very similar. Like, you know, there was a time where people support each other, you know, you get great commissions, you know, products. And then all of a sudden it's just like pushing a lot of stuff. And he was seeing things like people making claims about the product and endorsing it when the product wasn't even out there yet, or they couldn't have possibly had a look at it. So he started to see some of the less ethical or honest aspects of it too, and pulled away as well. And I remember your guys' names in those old affiliate markets, and because I know that was a powerful thing back then.
So there was kind of a long period where there was a lot of guys I felt were just they I wouldn't say they sold out, but they were chasing the money. They were good marketers and they realized, hey, I can sell to females over 60 these different weight loss products and make, you know, an extra zero at the end of each year, or I can stay true to my roots. And I found a lot of guys kind of just went that direction. I never went in that path. I stayed true to the muscle building roots, and I focused on building my own brand. So I stopped doing affiliate marketing, and I went back to just creating content on YouTube, focusing on my offers. And that's actually when my business hit a peak with my muscle building stuff. And that's when I actually was having the most fun. I was selling my stuff, and I was running my muscle camps. I was building my name, my methodology. I felt really proud of what I was putting out there. And that was about a 12, that was about 12 years into the game. And then this was just a little bit before COVID and everything, the whole concept of high ticket coaching came around, where all of a sudden people started to realize you could almost take like a low ticket, mid ticket product and put a high ticket price point on it. And that became like the bull run. And I think this has lasted for about 7 years or so. And this past year, say 2017 to 2023, there's been a bull run of high ticket. Everybody made a lot of money. There was a lot of disposable income in the space. People were pulling out, you know, from the pandemic, et cetera. People weren't going out as much. People were dropping 2 grand, 3 grand, 4 grand, like just like that. Like sales calls were 15, 40 minutes, and people were just spending money because they needed a trainer and they had the money, and you didn't even need to be a really good marketer. So I think a lot of people got spoiled during the pandemic. I mean, having been a business coach over the last 7 years to over 2,000 active students, I can tell you that I've seen people's revenues go up very, very high and come down very, very low over that window of time because there was a massive element of luck. And I don't think people understand like how much timing has to do with making money online. So now where we're at now is like the conversation a lot of my students are having with me is not about scaling. It's about stability. It literally goes right back to what, you know, most people want, stability and security. Like, hey, I want to stabilize my revenue. I can't tell you. I mean, I just had a couple, 1 year game plan calls, 2 year game plan calls today with members who are making a substantial, like a really good amount of money. And I asked them, what are your goals for next year? Not one of them actually reported a higher amount of revenue next year. They all said, I want to stabilize this. I want to make this more secure. I want more recurring revenue. I want to build a stronger brand. I want more consistent lead flow. I want to open up new channels for traffic. It wasn't, I need to make more money. And I think this is actually like super healthy. It's like fitness, right? Like if you're still in the game in your 50s and 60s, that's a form of progression because typically you should be regressing. So if you're maintaining, you're actually growing. And I try and teach my students this, but like they're so indoctrinated with like, if you're not making more money, your business isn't successful. And I'm like, dude, if you're maintaining what you're making right now and you're building a stronger community and you're producing a better transformations, like that's the name of the game right now. I really feel like you have to be like so long thinking to make it right now, especially right now.
All right, so let's tease out more here. What do you think the coaches now need to have on lockdown before they even start to think about the idea of scale?
Yeah, right now they have to have a great product. Like first and foremost, like their product has to produce client results. So you do have to be a great coach, right? You can dupe somebody for 2K or 3K once, but they're not renewing, right? You can have good marketing, a good sales pitch, but the real money is in people sticking on board with the program and sticking around for 3, 4 years and sending you referrals and sending you great transformations, et cetera. So client results is number one, a great product, tie right into that. The next thing is you have to have an epic brand. Like I really believe like your brand is your promise repeated over and over. So like you can't be a me too coach and do everything. You have to be known for something. A good example that everybody knows is like Jeff Cavalier, Athenex. Like that's a good, that's a strong brand. It's got 20 years behind that brand. So people are buying people's character now more than ever, not their services. So people are buying you. They're buying your story. They're buying your beliefs. They're buying your reputation. They're buying your track record. So like you have to have a strong brand. And that would be the second thing. I could give you a little short list here. The third thing is you have to have bingeable content. So bingeable content, short form and long form. So YouTube, podcasts, and even the reels, as much as I hate them. People, I hate it. Like how much value can you put into a 40-second reel? But I guess there is a formula for it. But I built my following on podcasts and YouTube. So I wouldn't say I'm a master at reels, but I've got the gift of gab. So you have to have bingeable content where people can consume, you know, up to 7 hours as fast as possible because there is a 7 hour rule where people will typically spend $1,000 once they've watched your content for about 7 hours. And that just is based on trust, like knowing trust factor. So if you're not like thinking with the mindset, like the content you're putting out today is going to help you produce clients next May and the May after, not in the next 2, 3 weeks, in the next 2 to 3 years. So that's really crucial. A lot of people, they want to plant the seed and eat the fruit tomorrow. It doesn't work like that, right? You plant the seed today and you reap a harvest next year or maybe in a couple of years.
And I'm big on the whole idea of long form content. writing is where probably I've had the most standout myself. And I actually think that because of the ubiquitous access to social media, and I know a bunch of people, both very skilled and ethical and very dubious and unethical, who have rapidly grown large followings and benefited from it on social media, I think there's actually a void and room to do the traditional things that have always worked, like writing great long form content on your own website, your own media that's driving email, people to join your email list, but also things like writing for the publications that are out there, which once functioned as the gatekeepers to anybody being who you followed and who were the authorities in the industry, like we talked about T Nation earlier, or a Muscle Fitness or a Men's Health. Now those gatekeepers are no longer keeping that gate, but I actually think they're still as valuable, if not more valuable than ever, because they are a way to stand out uniquely as a brand. And you talked about brands and trusting people. I like to highlight some of our friends, like a Natalia Mello, who's got a big brand, very successful, or some of my good friends, like a Don Saladino, a Luca Hocevar, Mike Isertel, and Nick Shaw with Renaissance Periodization. There are many more who they've built really impressive things. But the way that they treat people, the way that they interact with people in person, but the way that they shine through their media, you can tell this is someone I want to be associated with. This is someone whose stuff I want to consume. And I think if we contrast this against I like making fun of the people who walk through grocery store aisles saying that everything is garbage and oatmeal and spinach are bad for you and this sort of crazy shit. That's going to wear off, right? The luster is, and Liver King is easy to pick on, and he sort of had his fall from grace a little bit. He still has his followers. And now I think you have that, what is his partner, Paul Saladino, no relation to Don Saladino, who there's just a clip circulating of him now saying he's no longer eating carnivore. And this is literally one of the guys who pushed the carnivore narrative the most. So those things, they had their day in the sun, but people see through it more and more.
Yeah, I think I'd say like authenticity is like the key to the next round of business, because the market is so savvy now. They're already skeptical. You're just literally setting yourself up for a big fall. The internet is forgiving if you just come out and say, I fucked up, but like very few people at the Liver King did that. I mean, I think he would have recovered, but like guys are like pretty forgiving if you just come out and say, I fucked up. But like that's again not
People still cheer for
the
Tiger Woods, right? People still cheer
right.
for Tiger Woods, and he may have had one of the most public, like outside of like Michael Jackson, he probably had the most famous fall from grace, catastrophic fall from grace, and people still cheer for him.
Yeah, you can screw up, but you gotta own it. And I think there's so much fear that like you're gonna screw up. And I've had my fair share of that on online as well. So I had a big guy who attacked me pretty hard because I mixed up two body parts and we didn't catch it in the edit, and I owned it, but like he didn't let it go. And I mean, this video got over 500,000 views, and this guy just really wanted to take me down. I'm like, dude, we missed it. Like I said, I fucked up. Like I know the difference between the femur and the humerus. We messed up, but why didn't you take it down then? That's irresponsible. I'm like, because I figure people could read the comments and read that we acknowledge that we messed up. And so I'm like, it's you gotta just really, I mean, either have thick skin, or just realize like your business is evolving. I think that's something I figured out. Like a lot of the guys that kept growing, I noticed like they had one theme in common. They were all like growth minded. They weren't fixed mindset mind. They were like always growing, and if they screwed up, they'd own it. And they would have the conversation with their audience. There was like a massive amount of openness, transparency, authenticity, vulnerability, like, and people like love that because like you're on the journey with them, and your diehards will like they'll stay with you, and you can build a business, like a really strong business for like decades just with that one concept of like being truly authentic. People can read through it. People are really smart these days, so that's another piece to I think is more important than others, anything else. And then I'd add just two more things here. Hybrid traffic. So just having additional traffic sources, because having an email list, that's crucial. You gotta have an email list. Like Instagram reaches down. It doesn't have to be, but if it traditionally is down for most people, YouTube, podcasts, like Facebook, like if you've got access to these channels, I would be utilizing them all. Like, where do you want to be on all of them? If you're creating short form content, it's got to go up everywhere, just because it sounds exhausting and it kind of is, but you know, you can delegate this out to a team member, but it's all about being top of mind and being able to cut through the noise. Like, we are, like, attention is down, and I'm a huge believer that consumption comes before conversion. People don't convert until they consume. So you got to be top of mind. You know, I use another concept called speed to lead. So, like, the speed that you get to somebody is like what it's all about, because only 3 to 10% of your people are in the mindset of buying something today. And if they're thinking about hiring a coach and they see one of your things, oh yeah, they're going to reach out if they see a CTA of some sort. So you just have to be, you have to be on your game. It isn't like something you can, there's just way too much competition. So you don't have to, like, have this obsessive mindset around scaling, but you do need to be intentional about, like, actively growing your audience. And then after that, nurturing that audience. And what we do is we're finding that works more than ever. During the pandemic, like, you could scale your business just with content, CTA, book a call, close people. Like, that was it. It was that simple. Now, I mean, the other day, my sales guy said he had a dude that's looking at 7 other business coaching programs before he's making a decision. I'm like, I don't even know 7 fitness business coaches. Like, I'm like, how many calls did you line up? Like, 7. And, like, he's like, oh, I want to see what everybody's got to offer. I want to, like, check out, like, I want to. And then I'm like, by the time he's done 7, he's probably forgot. Like, he's probably got to do another 7. But that's where people are at. Like, they've been burned with big promises, mediocre offers, and people are scared. They're skeptical. They're savvy. So what we have found is that people still will buy. There's nothing wrong with the price points. Like, people think, oh, should I start doing low ticket or mid ticket? That's not what I'm saying at all. What I am saying is, you need a process to nurture people, live events, virtual events, like 5-day challenges, 3-day boot camps, 1-hour masterclasses. All that stuff is what I'm teaching our students to do with a calendar. Like, you've got to be out there giving loads of value. Like, after this podcast, I'm doing this thing called a hot seat. It's free in my Facebook group, and I'm auditing the guy's business. This is something that my paid members pay a lot for. I'm doing it for free. Like, this is the kind of stuff I've got to do now just in order to build trust. So at the end of the day, it's like, I think people, before they get on a sales call, there's actually a stat, I forget where I saw this, but, like, people have already decided if they're going to work with you. You just have to, like, don't screw it up. They've already watched so much of your content. They've already talked to 20 people in your program. Mm. They probably already read a review and know what you offer. They probably already know the pricing. So the reason they're taking a call is not to get sold, but just they want to see if, okay, is this guy going to screw it up? And can I really trust them? So say, just don't screw up the call.
I actually believe that. There's something embedded. You actually sort of led with an aspect of this, and it ties in. And it's a concept of status, which I like to kind of poke holes in the industry. And a lot of what you describe was people who are caught up, I think, in status thinking. And there's obviously the performative side of stuff. And I like to joke and make fun of loud business coaches who make up for, I think, how little substance what they have to say is by how loudly they project themselves. It's fairly common that they do it in front of some sort of supercar, which of course is so cliche.
Yeah.
But so we have that. And it feels like the business coaching space, you know, is kind of full of that stuff. So you yourself have talked about changes in your life, and you talk a lot about on your media, that stuff. And you yourself have moved away from any sort of visible status symbols. What's the lesson here for coaches?
Oh, dude, that's such a good question. I mean, you want to build a brand around the results you produce. Like, that's what you should get known for. Like, you know what you should brag about? Your students. You should stand in front of your students. They say, look at my student. Look at my student. Look, you brag about the success stories that you're producing. I think that's worth bragging about. Put your people out in front and, you know, brag about the lives that you're changing. Not that you're changing, but, like, look at, so you're the guide. I'm not the hero of the story. My student's the hero. I'm just the guide by this
story, you know, brand.
Exactly. Yeah.
Story,
yeah.
Brand. Joseph Campbell, hero's journey stuff. Yep.
Yeah. And the sage by the stage. Yeah. Yeah. The sage, there's a quote there, but so I'm just helping out. So That's first and foremost. Unfortunately, there's always going to be, guys that want to get laid and guys that want nice cars. And when you're posting, you're shooting shirtless photos with abs and hot chicks in front of nice cars, there's always a marketplace for external stuff. As long as people keep having babies, like, they're always going to have people to market to. So I don't think that's going away. But for me, I believe like your legacy is your content is your legacy. I'm a huge believer that your content is your legacy. So, do I want to be remembered as the guy that, had a Bentley, in the background and, shot my videos in front of houses? Or do I want to be remembered as a guy that, we had these great award ceremonies and lots of people came up and there was clapping and there was, that's what I want to be known for. So it just, I don't think that's authentic to anybody, to be honest. I get it. It's a game. It sells, but I want to be known for like who I am and not like what I do. And that took me a while to kind of figure out. Like, I found my identity in what I did, how much we were making each month, how many members we had, how big the staff was, like how many people were showing up at the event. Like, that was the stuff that I was getting my security in. I shared this with you privately, Andrew, and this is now kind of public intel, but, unfortunately, I'd say more so fortunately, God, said enough is enough. And, we bit off more than we could chew from a certain event. And then things started to spiral because we couldn't deliver on, the amount of volume that we sold. And, what happened is it started to create a negative spiral effect, which put me in a very emotional state that eventually led to a point where this wasn't the reason why I got to this point in my relationship. But 14 years in, my wife, she had enough, and she wanted a separation. Now, there's a whole other episode on that story, but a huge part of my contribution, I'm owning 100% of my 50%. Obviously, every relationship has two people at play. But like on my side of the coin, I was so disconnected from myself. I was so checked out. Like I was giving my family the leftovers, my wife the leftovers. It was, if I was in these, punk ass moods, I would bring this mood, this little whininess into the home if we had a bad day, if it was a bad sales day. My mood was dependent based on how well the business was going. And she had had enough. And I didn't even realize how disconnected I was to myself until this happened. All of a sudden, I woke up. For her, it was too late. So it's too late. Like, it's too late. And we're not divorced. We're currently separated. I don't know what's going to happen, to be honest, but we've been separated for 16 months. And now I'm living the reality of a single dad, three kids. They just went to their mom's house around the corner. I got to say bye to them. And they're texting me while I'm talking to you. Miss you already. When do we see you next? My five-year-old is, how many days till we see you again, daddy? Like, stuff a five-year-old should not be saying. And I have seen now the real life consequence of taking your relationships for granted. And just assuming that, hey, I'm married, I got a wedding ring, we said vows, we'll figure out that later. Just kicking. And it's not that she didn't express herself. She said, Vince, I need you. You're not here. The kids need you. And I was just not connected. I spent the last 16 months in like some very intense therapy to just decode everything that led up to this, just understanding my past. And that's a whole nother episode. But I have seen the dark side of scaling and hitting, over seven figures in a weekend, and then trying to figure out how do we do that again? And how do we double that? And like, just not even feeling anything. We went out for the night. We all had a bunch of beers and had a party. But then next week it was like, hey, it wasn't like, how do we take care of everybody and make sure like we stabilize this? It's like, how do we do this again? Because it was about like telling the guys, we had our first seven-figure month, and getting the applause of those guys while everybody else is, we hit 1.5, we hit two. It's like, what are we doing here? What are we doing here? Hiring three coaches, I don't even know their names. Like, and then all of a sudden, it took that, I hate to say this, Andrew, but it took that for me to wake up. I honestly would probably be the same guy, just the same disconnected guy. Obviously, very passionate, very driven, love what I do. I figured out my passion years and years ago, but I was out of control. I was out of control. There was no margin in my life. It was just about more and feeding this insecurity that I never attended to for, since my teens.
You wonder just how many people in the industry are where they are, fueled. I think insecurity can only take you so far, but are fueled by it. And, I have utmost respect for, say, Dr. Lane Norton. And Lane is very transparent about, that aspect of things and what he's often fueled by. And, I think he's got an indomitable will and no one will outwork him or beat him. But you could also see, like, he uses that as fuel. At what point does that fire burn out? And I really appreciate the getting to peek behind the curtain of someone who, as I use the word iconic, and I don't use that very often, you've been around a long time. You're in, if you're not in the forefront, there's always a specter of Vince Del Monte and your impact on the industry. And here you are sharing some of the vulnerable stuff. And I think a lot of other coaches I've talked to, especially the last couple of years when things felt a little harder for them, they look at everybody else and it's like, oh, well, all these other people look like they're doing really good. Well, those people are not showing you the harder side struggles. I know Jonathan Goodman, who's a very good friend of mine, and I think of you two, in a very, very similar place, similar legacy, Canadians on top of it all. And Jonathan had posted something, the exact what it was, I forget, but what I took note of is it was, again, him being vulnerable about just how this shit isn't automatic or easy. And he's been actually pretty good and transparent about the process of his writing his new book and talking about even overhauling his own business and having to cut a lot of staff during COVID and a major pivot in their direction. So it's refreshing to hear people who are where you are sharing these things, because I think it takes pressure off all these other coaches to try to live up to some impossible ideal that is probably a fabrication on some level.
Yeah, it's funny because when I hired Bedros, I went to do a half day with him, and I can't remember how he said it, but I noticed a couple big names on his social media. I said, "Oh, you had so and so in your office for the half day. How was that?" And I always ask him, like, trying to get something out of him, like, how much are they pulling in? And he goes, how much are they pulling in on their social media, or how much are they pulling in when they tell me in this office? And I'm like, oh, he's like, those are two different numbers, Vince. I'm like, really? So that's one thing you got to understand. There is a lot of posturing and projecting. And like you were saying at the start, like, there are, like, the reality is there are guys who make a lot of money, but the profit margins are 10, 20%, and they have like massive staffs. And hey, God bless them. I'm not telling anybody like to like what you've been called. Some guys have been called to build these, maybe empires, I don't know. But that's something each guy needs to check themselves on. I feel like what the danger that I'm warning people about is like I was projecting something that wasn't happening. I feel like I never woke up one day and said, I want to screw my wife over, screw my family over. Like, I'm a good man. Like, I've figured that out. Like, my heart, I'm a genuine guy. I'm a sincere guy, but I also have worldly desires, very strong worldly desires. For men, it's fame, fortune, power, and pleasure. Two F's and two P's. That's like what essentially every man is fighting every day: fame, fortune, power, and pleasure. So with me, I never, checked myself. Like, there wasn't any reason to like check myself, and my ambition got the better of me. And next thing I was building my identity around a bigger business, and I didn't see the value in a better business first. It's kind of like, carbohydrates, you've got to earn them. There's nothing wrong with carbs, but you got to earn them. There's nothing wrong with a bigger business, but you have to earn it. So what we teach now is how to build a bigger, sorry, a better business from the inside out. Build a great product, build a great reputation, build a lot of great relationships. I call them reverse scaling methods, reverse scaling. So build your name, build consistent traffic sources, like get those things established before you say, hey, now we're going to start running ads here. We're going to start doing all these things that are much more costly, risky, and just have a lot more sophistication. So there's a lot of things to be aware of. I also blame Alex Hormozi. I love him, but like I think he also like has really made entrepreneurship like look like, oh yeah, I love Alex, but that book in itself, there's two problems with that book. Well, one, yeah, 100 million offers, 100 million leads, great books. The first one, I mean, his content in itself just makes it sound like anybody can make 20, 30 grand a month. Like he's really mainstream entrepreneurship. Like he makes it look like anybody can build a $1 to $3 million a year business. I think another th problem with that book is the first one was like he taught everybody how to make like the biggest, boldest guarantee. So everybody started to try and one up the other guy, and you just can't do that. Like it's not possible to just keep making better and better offers because it's just not realistic. So I think what's better is to make a better presentation that's way more transparent and way more honest than trying to make a better guarantee. Like our guarantees, there is no guarantee. That's our guarantee. We don't get like I can't guarantee anything. Like we have the no guarantee. Like, well, then why would I join you? So because we're not looking for people to guarantee results to, because I can guarantee you my time, but I don't know what you're doing with your time. So we've almost taken an opposite approach to it. Like my coach never gave me a guarantee. Why would I give you a guarantee? And does it cost me money? Absolutely. We'd make more money with a stronger guarantee. But when we had a guarantee a couple of years ago, that's when our program grew the fastest, and we had so many people that should not have been in the program. And that
Yes.
created like internal issues. So all of a sudden you got delinquent payments. Month two, month three, people are complaining. Month four, people are ghosting. Like, it's like, why do we onboard all these people? The opportunity costs of like all, now all of the staff I have to employ to watch these people who shouldn't be in the program. You have to think about these things. So, again, scaling, again, if you can do it, if you can grow, I think the whole goal is more though, like it's like kind of gaining weight and losing weight. I'll kind of give you this final analogy. One of the best fitness coaches I had, shout out to Coach Ryan Fanley, was when he noticed that I was an extreme guy. So I wanted to bulk fast and I wanted to cut fast. Like I didn't know the concept of going slow. So after he had watched me, like I was the all or nothing guy. Like if I messed up Monday morning breakfast, I just might as well mess up the whole day. So he said, I'm giving you what's called the half pound rule. So we started with this bulk, and he said, you're not allowed to gain more than half a pound per week. That's the rule. That was it. It was a single rule. And I was like, a half a pound per week? He's like, yeah, because if you gain more than half a pound per week, you're going to gain more muscle. So you're going to gain more fat than muscle. And you're going to think you're all pumped up in the gym. Then you take your shirt off in the morning, and you're going to look like a melted candle. And I'm like, she's freaking right. When I bulk up too fast, I look good in the gym when I have a pump, but then in the morning I look fat. So I'm like, he gave me the half pound rule. So we bulked up, and then when we bulked up, he kept me there. He said, we're not cutting, we're gonna stay here, we're gonna hang out here for a couple months. And then when we cut, he brought me down half a pound per week, and I had to take my weight every single day of the week, average it out, and send it into him. And I was not allowed to lose more than half a pound per week. And that was the year I looked my leanest and most muscular at the end of that, and it was the slowest I went. And I believe there's a lot of value in that mindset towards building a business as well.
Makes sense. I think that's a really good place to leave off. I mean, Vince, it's obvious that we could talk for 2 more hours here, but we both got to go do stuff. So let's leave people with how they can find you.
Yeah, Instagram at Vince Del Monte. There's a blue verified account. Podcast is the Vince Del Monte Show, then YouTube as well, Vince Del Monte.
All the basics. This has been good. And
Yep.
this is a really, really unique, vulnerable, awesome opportunity to kind of peel back, and see behind. And I hope coaches take this. It's both a literal story, but it's also a great metaphor for, I think, what is the reality. And even some of my very successful friends have had challenges along the way that don't necessarily get shown on social media, and they manage. But it's not the smooth ride that I think a lot of people either And I don't think that the people are necessarily misleading if they don't portray it, because sometimes it's just, it's not stuff that they want to share. They're powering through it, they're managing it. But and some of those people, they're not misleading people about how successful they are. Some people outright do. But some people are just private about, the struggles, and that's okay. But it can inadvertently leave a lot of us feeling like, wow, we're uniquely and very, very alone in the difficult parts of it where everybody else is thriving. And I can assure you it's not the case. For everybody listening, go check out Vince, okay? He's been doing this a long time. There's a reason why you're still in this after so long. There are people who steal your content, turn it into their own mentorship shit. I've seen crap like that. But those people have to rely on you for it, and they can't do it themselves. And I keep saying this, I know I've been a little bit inconsistent with the episodes. I'm trying to bring you guys amazing guests. Last week I had Dean Somerset back, and he was spectacular. And so drop this into the lap of a coach, a friend of yours, someone who maybe they're struggling and maybe they feel like they're isolated. Share Vince's story. Go follow Vince, and thank you for tuning in, Vince. I really appreciate you.
Absolutely. Thank you.